Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio. Coming up later in the program, staying safe during the current heat wave and the others that are sure to follow this summer. But up front, June is Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, and Queer LGBTQ Pride Month to honor the 1969 Stonewall Uprising in Manhattan. The Stonewall Uprising was a tipping point for the gay liberation movement in the U.S. For most, it has been shortened to being simply called Pride Month. While there are celebrations during Pride Month, it is a time when many highlight issues or challenges facing the LGBTQ community. Earlier this month, Governor Tom Wolf signed an executive order to add sexual orientation and gender identity or expression as protected classes for state workers under the Commonwealth sexual harassment policies. The governor also called on the legislature to approve the Fairness Act, which would add sex, sexual orientation, and gender identity or expression to the provisions of state law that prohibit housing, employment, education, and public accommodations discrimination. That bill has made it through the Republican-controlled state government committee for years. On today's program, we're joined by Rafael Alvarez Febo, executive director of the Pennsylvania Commission on LGBTQ Affairs, and Preston Heldebrato, executive director of the Pennsylvania Youth Congress. Welcome to the program. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Preston Heldebrato, I want to start with you. Before we get into some of the things that state government is working on or not working on, there are a lot of months or weeks or even days that are designated for awareness, remembrance, or honoring. But Pride Month seems to have a special meaning for those in and now even outside the LGBTQ community. What does Pride Month mean to you?
Pride Month is such an important historical remembrance for the LGBT community, and it's also a point of personal pride for each of us. You know, at many of the Pride events across the state, this year we're seeing many communities have events for the first time, and these are really local events. And so often we get young people coming up to our table, this is their first event, and they are so overwhelmed with happiness and just a feeling of peace and security, because really, apart from being an absolutely important historical remembrance, for each of us, it is a recognition that we are proud to be here and to be alive and to be thriving in a world that sometimes does not want us to exist.
So what does it say to you when there are communities that are holding Pride events for the very first time?
It shows just how widespread support for the LGBT community has become. Support for our protections and rights is higher than ever before. We are valued members of communities, even in places that people might not expect for us to be. We are friends and neighbors and family members and coworkers, and we are vital parts of our communities.
Rafael Alvarez Febo, I want to ask you about Pride Month before we do get into some of the other issues. What does it personally mean to you? And just from what Preston had to say, it sounds like this is a month that celebrates freedom.
Absolutely. I think, you know, this is America, and having the ability to express yourself, to be who you are. I think it's really important that people understand that, you know, we are being ourselves, and there's nothing more liberating than being yourself and living your full truth. So, you know, for me, Pride Month has been, you know, a way for me to express myself, but a way for me to connect with other community members in safe spaces. And I know that the term safe space always becomes polarized, but, you know, seeing the violence, seeing the you know, trauma that people in our community go through on a regular basis, having safety, physical safety, but also safety to be able to express ourselves, to be all of our gender expressions, all of our orientation, to be all of those identities in a space that's safe is super important. So when communities in rural parts of the state start having pride events, which is an amazing, weather vane, so that people know that, you know, even in rural Pennsylvania, there's a need for safe spaces for people to be themselves, to be free. This is America. People deserve that right to be free. So I love to see these rural celebrations, and you know, I think it's only going to keep going in that direction.
When you say safe spaces, and you mentioned that the LGBTQ community has been targeted in the past for violence, and we do know that the suicide rate amongst those in the LGBTQ community is higher. So safe spaces, is it safer today, even with more people coming out, even with more pride celebrations, is it safer today than it was in the past?
Well, I think that, you know, we still have to acknowledge the fact that trans women of color are being murdered at crazy rates throughout the country, across the globe. And, you know, there is a very big fear of this, you know, unleashed violence that really is permeating a lot of society around LGBTQ people. So there is a need for safe spaces. Is it more, you know, I think the data may show that it has become more violent or more dangerous, but I know that we continue to see violence against specifically trans women of color in a way that's really troublesome.
Why is that?
Well, I don't have hate in my heart, so I don't know how to explain why people hate. But the reality is that there is a chauvinistic, patriarchal belief system that tells men that a trans person challenges their manhood, right? There's these very antiquated notions about even a woman's place in society. And those things bleed over into violence because we're not seen as full people. So I think that, you know, again, I can't articulate why hate exists. I can only say the patterns of society that might lead to it. But it is one of those things that, you know, it shouldn't be intuitive to humanity to have that kind of hate in your heart.
Yeah, and I wasn't going to put that on you that you would know the mindset.
No.
But I'm just saying that it has been when, I don't want to say a trend, but it is something that trans women of color, just in the last few years, we are hearing many, many more cases of them being targeted for violence. And the thing about it is, and I don't want to make this sound like it's just rural areas that have to come up to date, put it that way. But most trans women of color live in urban areas, don't they? So these acts of violence are occurring in cities.
No, absolutely. No, so that's the part that it requires the work, right? I think that in many communities, communities of color, you know, black and brown communities, there is a very ingrained machismo. I'm Puerto Rican. You know, we use the word machismo, which is, you know, the practice of patriarchal norms. And those things are very much enforced and pushed through, you know, in those communities. And the reality is that that's something that needs to be broken down. You know, we always do this work to educate folks, to really say, you know, to be a cisgender man or to be a man doesn't mean to be violent, doesn't mean that you have the right to take someone else's rights away from them. So it is a lot of work, but, you know, there's culturally, there's been you know, and this comes from, you know, and we can go back 400, 500 years, you know, this goes back to colonialism and people, black and brown people, especially men, trying to reclaim their space as, you know, having agency over themselves. you know, after colonialism, slavery, and oppression. So it's a really big mixed bag of societal ills that leads to that kind of violence and ugliness.
We have a lot to cover, and I want to move
Absolutely.
On to some... Go ahead, Preston.
Sorry, absolutely agree with everything Raphael said. And if you don't mind me jumping in very quick.
No, go right ahead.
While clear-cut transphobic attitudes absolutely play a role, trans women of color are also more likely to face violence due to the circumstances they might be living under at the intersections of transphobia, racism, and especially wealth inequality. They are often stuck in situations where they are more likely to face violence because they don't have access to affordable housing, healthcare, education, or well-paying jobs. And that's why, you know, efforts to improve those circumstances and especially non-discrimination protections that, you know, prevent them from being stuck under those circumstances are so important.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because that is one of the big issues that is facing our society and the LGBTQ community, and that is discrimination. The Fairness Act. I mentioned that earlier this month, Governor Wolf and others once again called for the legislature to approve the Fairness Act. And what the Fairness Act would do is, as I mentioned in the introduction, it would add sexual orientation and gender identity and expression to the provisions of state law that prohibit housing, employment, education, and public accommodations discrimination. Rafael Alvarez Febo, discrimination. I almost get the sense when we were talking about how people are much more accepting today, that there are a lot of people who almost assume that this is in place, that there are discrimination laws for for LGBT community, and that's not the case.
Yeah, no, I think it is a big misconception. I think people think that those laws are already on the books, and I think people have that perception because it seems so wrong to discriminate against someone based on who they are. So it's almost like in their minds it's intuitive for those who believe those laws are on the books. And then the other thing that complicates situations in a good and a bad way is that many municipalities have non-discrimination laws on the books, right? So Philadelphia, Allegheny County, a bunch of other municipalities throughout the state have non-discrimination laws on the books that cover those things within the municipality. But where that becomes a problem is if I, let's say, live in Philadelphia, but I work in somewhere in Forest County, I'm just, you know, saying a random place in the state, I can be discriminated in that area, right? I could be denied services at a store. I could, you know, be fired from my job without any recourse, because there is no, there is no protections under the law in those areas.
Do both of you know people who have been the victims of discrimination?
Yes.
Preston, I know that you...
Go ahead. Either one of you. Go ahead. Well, I'll just call it Preston. Go ahead. Do you personally know someone who's been discriminated against?
Yes, unfortunately, we work with many people who have been, denied housing or turned away from businesses and even fired from their jobs. At our public support website for non-discrimination protections, we have those stories documented of, you know, people all across the state who have faced these issues.
I mean, the people who are discriminating, are they blatant about it? Do they come right out and say that, you're not getting this apartment, you're not getting this job, I'm firing you because of your sexual identity or, that you're gay or lesbian? I mean, do they come right out and say that?
I think it's
sometimes
a mixed bag,
yes.
Right?
Go ahead, Rafael.
Yeah, no, I think it's a mixed bag, and I just wanted Preston to go because, you know, the Pennsylvania Youth Congress has, like Preston said, many stories on their website, very specific examples, but a lot of it is a mixed bag. So, you know, there could be people that say, look, they won't say specifically, but they're doing it very obvious that you're not going to get services. In many cases, if you're specifically to rent a property, you go through the application process, everything is fine, and then you show up with your partner to tour the apartment, and then all of a sudden you're no longer part of the running for the apartment. Right, all of a sudden, oh no, someone is signing a lease already. You know, so it's never like specific. It's not always specific, but in many cases, it really happens like after, you know, you already begin a process.
So, you know, what that says is they know it's wrong. They know it's wrong, but yep. They can't overcome their biases.
Exactly.
Right, Raphael?
Exactly.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk as we come to the end of Pride Month. We're speaking with Raphael Alvarez-Febo, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Commission on LGBTQ Affairs, and Preston Heidelbreitel, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Youth Congress. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at @SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. So before we get back to the Fairness Act, Mr. Febo, wanted to ask about the Pennsylvania Commission on LGBTQ Affairs, because you're a relatively new department under the executive branch. I mean, it's been 2 years now since the governor appointed the commission. So talk about its mission, if you would.
No, absolutely. So the commission was started through an executive order in 2018. The commission actually joins a group of commissions that are meant to represent marginalized people in state, in state government. So we have a commission on women, a commission on LGBTQ affairs, a commission on Latino affairs, Asian Pacific American affairs, and an African American affairs. And some of those commissions date back to the 90s, 80s. So the LGBTQ Commission was started in 2018, like I said, joining those other commissions of marginalized individuals to basically help advocate for policy changes within state government. We have commissioners, 40 commissioners from all corners of the Commonwealth. So we people from Erie, from NEPA, Southeastern PA, Central PA, Southwest PA. I'm actually in Pittsburgh now visiting commissioners over here. We just have a great representation of a cross-section of the LGBTQ community. We have trans women of color. We have, you know, older individuals. We have, you know, young people, all ethnicities. We really wanted the commission to be representative of all of these facets of the community for the reason to advocate for policy changes, right? So we have folks working on issues in the aging community, which is it's going to be a very big part of the LGBTQ community as more boomers age into facilities and other services. We have a committee that works on education and young people services. A lot of LGBTQ youth go through, unfortunately, the Department of Human Services, and we're trying to always figure out where are barriers to make sure that state services are better, and what are the steps that need to be taken, whether they're legislative or whether they're, you know, internal policy shifts that could help improve those outcomes.
You listed a lot of what you're advocating for. Is there one big issue or two or three big issues right now that have taken on a priority?
Well, there's so many, Scott. I will say, as you start unraveling systems, right, in state government, you start seeing where there's something that's very easy for someone else. for a non-binary person or for a trans person, it's super hard. For a couple trying to adopt a child, it's super complicated. It's not a streamlined process because the system is meant for very specific heteronormative people, right? So, but to your point or to your question, non-discrimination, that's HB 300, the Pennsylvania Fairness Act. That's top priority. It really does set the stage for all the other things that we're working toward. But there are other things in the Commonwealth that we really need to look at, and we need to do it now. In this Commonwealth in Pennsylvania, you can there's a trans and gay panic defense that a lawyer can use to say, oh, my client committed a violent act against someone, and it's okay because they were trans or gay. That's still an admissible defense mechanism here in Pennsylvania, right? So, and this
how
is
can that
this,
be?
This was used, I would say, 3 years ago in Philadelphia. A man killed a trans woman of color, and his attorney tried to use that defense. And lawyers think it's abhorrent, right? The bar association's working on, you know, making that a very untenable use of a defense, but there's no ban in Pennsylvania to use that. As an attorney, that is in your toolbox to defend your client. And it's abhorrent. It's abhorrent. Defenses shouldn't allow someone to, resort to killing someone or being extremely violent to someone and then say it's okay because of who they are. I mean, this is Jim Crow kind of stuff, you know?
You know, Raphael, I have to say that that's what the first thing that crossed my mind was Jim Crow type of stuff. I mean, it sounds like something in the 1930s in the Deep South that, oh, you know, I killed this guy because he's black. I mean, I have to say that I'm flabbergasted that that's still on the books, that could be used as a defense here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. No, and I use that example because it is extreme. But people need to understand that's why we're not advocating for more and taking away from people. We're just reclaiming humanity here, right? We're people. Trans women are women. Gay people deserve their rights. We're not taking anything away from people. And I think that's really important to codify. I mean, in this Commonwealth, you can still send your kids to conversion therapy camp. I mean, this is a practice that most mental health professionals categorize as abuse, right? We're going to pray your identity away. We're going, you know, and it doesn't work, right? It leads to suicide rates, increased suicide rates, and that's still allowed in the Commonwealth. So passing a ban on that kind of therapy is huge. It's all these kind of moving parts happen. And we need them to happen, and non-discrimination is really the doorway for that.
So, Preston, I wanted what Raphael just listed, without me asking the question specifically about the challenges facing the LGBTQ community, but let me ask your opinion, too. What are some of the biggest challenges? And I'm sure that, he covered a lot of ground there, but what are some of the challenges that you see?
I absolutely echo everything Raphael just said. On top of being, able to be legally fired from our jobs or turned away from housing, there are also issues that LGBT Pennsylvanians face every day, especially regarding hate crimes. We don't have current, we are not listed as protected classes in our current hate crimes legislation. And there's especially right now, a lot of awareness around name change process reform. It is so difficult for trans people in Pennsylvania to legally change their name and gender markers on their papers. And this can cause so many problems when trying to apply for a job and trying not to be discriminated against, or going into places that require ID, and not knowing if you can go to those places, if you will be safe, because you might be outed by your legal name or gender marker. And, you know, it can cost exorbitant amounts of money. And a lot of people just can't pay that, especially trans youth. So streamlining the name change process in Pennsylvania, which there are many, it varies from county to county. There's no one process. So making that accessible, simple, and less costly for people will really improve the lives of so many.
Now, is that, you know, obviously we're talking, when you talk about name change, you're talking about for everyone, right?
Right, right. That doesn't just go for trans people.
Right,
there are
right,
many
right.
reasons for someone to change their name.
Right, exactly. I just wanted to make sure that, you know, the audience was aware that that this is something that covers all Pennsylvanians when you're talking about the cost and the hoops that you have to jump through. We have a question here from a listener, Kit, who asked, as a person living in rural Pennsylvania, how, when applying for a job or applying for housing, does the person interviewing know your sexual orientation? Are the sexual orientation questions by law allowed to be asked? How does the sexual preference question brought up in an interview? Raphael, let me ask you that question. I mean, are these people just assuming, or do they come right out and they ask it?
No, I think it's more tacit, right? I think you know, they would not ask that on an application. If any listeners have seen an application that's asked on it in a way to discriminate, please send it. You know, send it to Scott and it'll get to us. But no, it's always or for the most part is after the application is submitted and you go on a tour of the property. You know, in the case of applying for a rental unit, for job applications, there's a lot of assumptions, right? If you're not fitting into the gender binary, you know, like the way you're dressed, the way you speak, those are ways that, you know, people can assume, and then you can lose out on opportunities for housing or a job. Or, you know, you go to the diner while you're driving through Pennsylvania and, you know, if you come off as not what you're, you know, supposed to be, according to those folks, they can, you know, give you bad service or deny you service. So I think it's more on the assumptions and it's the people trying to reinforce what gender norms are, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we have to fit in these boxes in order for people to take us seriously or, you know, give us opportunities.
Just 2 weeks ago, Governor Wolf also signed an executive order to add sexual orientation and gender identity or expression as protected classes for state workers under the Commonwealth sexual harassment policies. And I want to point out, puts emphasis, that this is just for what the governor has control of, state workers, that you know, it may or may not exist laws against the sexual harassment in other parts of the state. You know, Raphael, tell me why that's important. I guess the question I'm asking is, you know, there are sexual harassment rules and laws in place already. How is it different for LGBTQ community members?
So, Scott, when I first started in this role at the end of 2019, right before COVID hit, I was getting, you know, from my predecessor, I was getting multiple emails from state employees who are going through really horrible harassment cases. And I can't give specifics. But this workplace bullying, this really just toxic environments that were occurring in different departments, right? And I was just seeing a pattern. And, you know, I went through, I looked at our sexual harassment. I took it. We're supposed to take this training every year. Commonwealth employees take the training every year online. And as I took the training, I looked at the executive orders, and they were from 2002, right? So this is Governor Schweiker. This is, you know, it's about to be 20 years ago that these were updated. And the world has changed in 20 years. Hmm. The world always changes in 20 years. You know, this is not a thing. So when we looked at it, I was just appalled, and I said, look, Philadelphia has some really good trainings around, you know, sexual harassment of LGBTQ people. And so the difference is, right, and this is where clarifying and expanding protections, right? So, yes, the sexual harassment policies protect women, protect all types of folks in different power dynamics in their employment, but there was no clarity around what is harassment of LGBTQ people. So, for example, if your coworkers, like me, if I went to my job and my coworkers started gossiping about who I'm with and what I do and all of this stuff was going on, that would create a toxic environment if I did not want to be out, right? If I was afraid of that kind of environment, and then my coworkers start chit-chatting and gossiping, that puts me at risk, right? That puts my job at risk. So, you know, like that's an example, or outing someone, you know, while they're transitioning, or a person who is trans. You know, there was, some examples of people leaving things at people's desk to like bother them. And, you know, so like these were not clear under the policies in the Commonwealth. So I thought it was really important that we clarify for people that that is not acceptable behavior. We're here to serve Pennsylvanians. I'm here. I'm a public servant. If you work at PennDOT, if you work at DHS, if you work at any department, your main job is to help Pennsylvanians. So we should not have time to create toxic environments to our coworkers. And it really did come out of seeing a lack of clarity for those specific protections.
We're almost out of time. I want to thank both of you for being with us today. So, Raphael, what has to happen here? I mentioned that the Fairness Act, I mean, Pennsylvania actually had a law against discrimination at one point years ago. But what has to happen? This has been stuck in committee now for a long time, and it doesn't seem to be, there doesn't seem to be any big rush to get it out of committee and onto the floor of the House or the Senate.
Yeah, no, I mean, it does need to come out of committee. Definitely calling and tracing the bill, right? Call your state rep and trace the bill. Let them know that you're calling about HB 300, and then ask what committee does it go to, right? Follow the process. I think it's really good for people to educate themselves on how the bill moves within the General Assembly. But also people need to recognize that we are not that many votes away from it, if it went to the floor, from it passing. That's really important for people to know. We're not, it's not a huge, group of individuals. There are some moderate Republicans that would vote for it if it came to the floor. But it's stuck in that committee. So really, calling those moderate Republicans who said that they would and getting that leadership to say, we need to release this bill. It needs to go to the floor for a vote. That way Pennsylvanians' voices can be heard. In the Senate, it has some really good chance of getting through. And the governor will sign it. He will sign it if the ink will still be wet, and he has promised that he would sign it. So really following the bill, getting educated on how the process works, and that goes for every state bill. I think people really, getting engaged in their government is important. So I think that's the biggest thing.
Preston Heddlebridle, one final question. We very early on in our conversation, we talked about how acceptance has grown by leaps and bounds over the past 5-10 years. But it still seems as though younger people, younger Pennsylvanians, are more accepting than maybe some of the past generations. Why is that, first of all, that younger people are more accepting? And are you seeing more acceptance in those older generations?
Yes, to both of those questions. I think that youth in particular are so much more accepting is because, with the internet, there is a lot of information that's available to folks. So just by the nature of that, there are more people coming out earlier and earlier. So, in the past, where people might not have known anyone who was transgender or even gay or bi or a lesbian, now, as people are able to come out younger and younger, we grew up together. We're in each other's friend groups, where in each other's classes, we are able to represent ourselves and speak to our peers about our issues. And I think that is the number one reason why our generation is so accepting. And also to your question about older generations becoming more accepting, absolutely. Acceptance for LGBT people is at an all-time high. I think the reason we are seeing such a visible backlash is because of the widespread support that the minority reactionary personalities are louder and perhaps more bold, but they are a growing shrinking minority, I should say. And even in, local and state government, more and more rural communities are stepping up to, through local policies and laws, protect their LGBT community members. And even in state government, like Raphael said, for statewide non-discrimination, we have the votes on the floor. The only reason this is such an issue is because over and over and over again, our community has been used as a political football in this partisan game. We need our legislators to work together in unity to get this to the governor's desk. And what we all can do is contact our legislators and let them know that we support this. Pennsylvania is supportive of LGBT community members.
Hmm. Raphael Alvarez-Febbo, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Commission on LGBTQ Affairs, and Preston Heddlebridle, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Youth Congress. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Central Pennsylvania is in the middle of a heat wave where temperatures have been in the mid-90s and the heat index has risen to 100 degrees or above. Not only is it uncomfortable outside, but it can be dangerous for humans as well as pets. Three of the biggest dangers, I should say, are heat cramps, heat exhaustion, and heat stroke. Older people could be especially vulnerable if they are in a space that isn't air-conditioned. Babies and pets should never be in a vehicle with the windows up. The American Red Cross is offering tips to stay safe during the heat wave and others that are sure to follow this summer. Because remember, it is only June. This is the last day of June, so we probably have another 2.5 months where we could have several more heat waves along the way. Joining us is Laura Burke. She's the executive director of the Central Pennsylvania chapter of the American Red Cross. Laura Burke, thank you very much for being with us today.
Well, thank you for having me today.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. So before we get into some of these tips, why did you feel the need to do this now? I mean, yes, this is an extreme heat event, and I'm sure we've already had two or three heat waves this spring and summer. We may have more, but why now?
The Red Cross every year issues a variety of safety tips depending on the activity that you are undertaking in the immediate future. So with the holiday weekend coming up, we thought it was important to issue a variety of safety tips to make sure everyone has a happy and safe summer. And heat safety is certainly one of the more important ones that we do issue each year.
Looking down through your list, I won't say that there were any of those that jumped out at me as extremely new or anything like that, that a lot of them are common sense. Why do people need to be reminded of these things?
Because sometimes things that I think that we people think are common sense could often be lost kind of in the back of the brain. So the Red Cross wants to make sure we bring those to the forefront each year for things that could be common sense, postponing outdoor games and activities when it's over 100 degrees, taking those frequent breaks. Sometimes it's hard for individuals to advocate for themselves during times like this. So we want to make sure that we're offering tips to ensure that everyone is safe and it's at the forefront.
Something you just mentioned I wanted to talk about, you said taking breaks. For those who are working outdoors I mean, I'm sitting here in my basement, in an air-conditioned basement. It's comfortable. Have been for the past 3 days here during this heat wave. But when I drive by those who are, construction crews or those who are working outside, I think to myself, boy, that has to be just awful. And I'm wondering if their employers build in times where they can take a break, or is it on them, the workers on themselves, to say, hey, I need a break from this heat?
You know, Scott, I think it's a combination. The Red Cross really advocates for, avoiding, those extreme temperature changes. So avoid going from extreme heat into extreme cool, back out to extreme heat, back out to extreme cool. And the key thing is to make sure these individuals are staying hydrated, drinking 3/4 of a gallon of water a day, and not just guzzling it all in one sitting, making sure you're drinking it frequently throughout the day to maintain your level of hydration. It's also important if those individuals working outside are able to wear loose-fitting, lightweight, light-colored clothing. Avoiding those dark colors absorbs, because those absorb sun rays. So light-colored clothing, loose-fitting. But truly, if you must be working outside, the frequent breaks is very, very important. And also, use a buddy system. So if you have a coworker or a foreman or someone on the job that you can have to work when you're working in excessive heat, use that buddy system to make sure that you're checking on each other and also sharing that workload if possible.
And, of course, a lot of that goes toward, some of the same advice could be used for what you were talking about earlier, kids outside playing, or even adults that are doing other activities, leisure activities outdoors. That, yes, it's the 4th of July weekend, but at the same time, take into account that, this weekend is maybe not supposed to be as hot, but right now, take into account that we are in extreme weather conditions.
Correct. Yes, we are in extreme weather conditions, and it's important to take those tips that were translated, for the individual working outside, translate that into your home environment as well, and make sure that you are not outside if you don't have to be right now. Make sure that there's plenty of hydration, plenty of water. Let's avoid alcohol, caffeine, and overly sugary beverages to water these days, because that's going to maintain your hydration. The other beverages may be counterproductive to the hydration. Wearing the loose-fitting, lightweight clothing is also very important. But again, frequent breaks and staying inside if you don't have to be out is the most important thing we can communicate to individuals in the residential areas.
I mentioned in the introduction heat stroke and heat cramps, that a lot of that does come from dehydration. But I did want to point out something that you just mentioned, that it's water that will keep you hydrated. It may be that temptation to drink an ice cold cola or an ice cold beer, it might be there, but at the same time, it's water that will keep you hydrated.
You're absolutely correct. The water is one of the most important things you can do. Again, 3/4 of a gallon at least per day during these hot temperatures.
You have some advice on keeping your home cool. In what ways?
Yes, it's very important to make sure that you're prepared and you're keeping your home cool to prepare for these heat waves. Cover your windows and drapes or shades. So those heat-reducing, light-blocking-out shades, I have mine drawn right now where there's sun beating into the house. You want to weather strip your doors and windows if possible. You have those window reflectors for your vehicles that you have, like aluminum foil covered cardboard. You can reflect the heat back outside if you lack drapes. So that's something that you can do for your home to make sure it is reflecting the heat out of your home. Make sure you add insulation to keep the heat out. Use a powered attic ventilator or an attic fan to regulate the heat levels of your attic and clears out that hot air. And if possible, install window air conditioners and insulate around them if you lack central air.
What about those people who don't have access to air conditioning, or, I think of some of the older people who are living alone that are vulnerable to some of these conditions caused by heat. What can they do?
Sure. You know, there's two different options. So if you are without air conditioning and you are able to get out of the home, you know, we recommend that during the hottest parts of the days, you seek relief from the heat. So you go to schools, libraries, theaters, malls, shopping centers, anywhere that there is air conditioning, and you make sure you seek respite in those areas. That's very, very important that you are out of your home in the hottest part of the day if you do not have to be in the home. Now, if you are someone who has a family member, friend, or neighbor who's in the home that is not able to exit their home, we want to make sure that we're checking on them throughout the day. And not just, you know, check on them in the morning and at night. We want to make sure we're checking on them frequently throughout the day and making sure that they have what they need to stay cool and safe during this time.
You know, I mentioned very early on about, you know, children and pets in vehicles. When in your list of advice or tips, you call it staying connected. Talk about that a little bit, if you would.
Staying connected, yes, it's very important. So, you know, you want to make sure that you know what the weather is going to be that day. You should just never leave infants, children, older adults, anyone, or pets in a vehicle unattended during these days. Even with the windows down, cars quickly heat up, and they heat up to very, very dangerous temperatures. So even if you think, oh, I have a window cracked, it's going to be very dangerous. So just never leave infants, children, older adults, individuals with disabilities, or pets in a vehicle unattended. Again, I indicated checking in on the adults, especially ones with chronic health conditions, at least twice daily, but frequently throughout the day is preferable, and ensure they're doing the tips like drinking enough water. They can make sure they can keep cool. Are they showing any signs of heat stress? And make sure you're on the lookout for those signs.
All right. So what are those signs?
Sure. There's a variety of different heat-related illnesses, so anything from heat cramps to heat exhaustion or heat stroke, which is the most serious medical condition. Some common symptoms that you will see for heat exhaustion is heavy sweating, cold, pale, clammy skin. If you have either a fast or a weak pulse, so either extreme, nausea or vomiting, muscle cramps. If you're very, very tired, dizzy, weak, terrible headaches, and even if you pass out, if you have any of those symptoms, you want to either make sure you move the yourself or the individual to a cool place, put cool cloth on our body, have the person sip water. But it's also very important that you seek medical help right away. You know, you can't be too safe during times like this.
When you say seek medical help right away, call 911 or call your doctor, go to urgent care, what?
I would say call 911.
You know, something else that you just listed symptoms, but I noticed that high body temperature is another one, 104 degrees Fahrenheit or higher. I mean, if someone is showing some of these symptoms, should you take their temperature?
If you have a thermometer available, taking their temperature would be great. That is a sign of heat stroke, which is the most serious medical condition. So if you do have a bodily temperature of 104 or higher, 911 right away. Don't stop and look for other symptoms. That's in a medical emergency, and we need to address it right away.
Well, we only have a minute or so left, Laura, and I want to thank you very much for being with us today. Just quickly, two things that I know it's hard to do quickly, but because it is a holiday weekend, you also address water safety and grilling safety. What kind of advice do you have for our listeners?
For water safety, I can't stress enough the importance of safety, life safety vests. And also making sure that there is a licensed or a capable adult supervising any pool, lake, or water activity situation. That's one of some of the most important things you can do when you're talking about water safety, especially with children involved. Keep sober, never swim alone, also is very, very important. And then when we're talking about things like grilling, you know, just make sure that you're maintaining a safe distance from your grill, you're using long tongs, long spatulas. Make sure that you are, you know, just taking every precaution possible. Keep pets, children, anyone away from the grill as well. And then, like I said, keep it away from the house, deck, tree branches, anything that could catch fire.
We only have 30 seconds left, Laura Burke. I want to thank you very much for being with us today. One quick thing. Do you need blood right now?
We are in a severe blood shortage period, so yes, we are in need of all blood types. If you are interested or able to donate blood, you can go to redcrossblood.org, look at all of the requirements, and then find a blood drive near you to donate.
Are we back to normal with blood drives?
Yes, we are. We've maintained, we've maintained our blood drives throughout the pandemic, and we're continuing that process now. And we are ready to and available to take your appointment if you make it on redcrossblood.org.
Laura Burke, Executive Director of the Central Pennsylvania Chapter of the American Red Cross, thank you very much for being with us today. I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great day.